Episode 842. August 10th, 2026. Great weekend and great Monday. Today's reading list is packed with some genuinely important pieces. A mix of hard truths about how we work, some genuinely useful technical content, and a pair of articles that land as a nice pair around. Open source AI. Let's get into it. Leading off with a big drop from Meta, a new model called Muse Glimmer, a 30 billion parameter open weights model built specifically for local agentic workflows. The headline is that it runs on a single consumer GPU, Mac or PC, 24 or 32 gigs of VRAM, thanks to 4-bit quantization that shrinks it down to under 20 gigabytes. It ships with a speculative decoding drafter that Meta says speeds up token generation by up to 3x on an RTX 5090. On the agentic benchmarks, SWE, Bench, Tau Bench, Deep Search, it's competitive with Gemma 431B and Qwen3 2627B in its size class. Optimized integrations are coming for Llama.cpp, MLX, ExecuTorch, Alama, and the usual suspects. Meta is framing this as a big step in making AI actually usable without a network connection, which is a meaningful direction. Then a piece that hit a nerve hard on Hacker News and Lobsters from Senko.net, the argument that saying code was never the hard part, is an insult to every programmer. The author's case is sharp and layered. First, if coding is so easy, why were programmers in high demand and commanding high salaries even before ZIRP? Why was there so much burnout? Why the leap code interviews? The obsession with finding 10x engineers? None of that makes sense if you're just transcribing what someone tells you to build. Second, if deciding what to build is the actual hard part, why aren't product managers the tech superstars? Why don't they face the same rigorous hiring process? Why are they paid less? The author isn't dismissing the importance of understanding customers or talking to stakeholders. They're pushing back hard on the dismissal of software craftsmanship as trivial. Their advice for thriving in this moment, accept that change happens, yes, but don't abandon your technical depth. Learn how software actually works, pointers, recursion, network protocols. And whatever you do, don't outsource your judgment and taste to AI. A meat proxy, as someone else recently called it. Strong piece. Quick fun one from Simon Willison. PDFs are terrible. Specifically, it's an anecdote from Accenture's internal data showing that non-engineers are the ones consuming massive amounts of tokens. Specifically, converting PDFs into images and then into Markdown. Willison's quip is perfect. Maybe if Accenture figures out that PDFs are a terrible medium for communicating information, they'll be able to push that message out to the rest of the business world. It's a small observation, but it speaks to a real pattern, the organizational habits that create token waste. From Blog4Ems, Stéphane Moreau with a piece on how managing 8 engineers now feels like managing 4 teams. His argument is that AI has dramatically reduced the engineering bottleneck. A pair of engineers can now ship features that used to take a full squad. But product thinking hasn't sped up at the same rate. PMs still need to discover opportunities, validate ideas, align stakeholders, define success metrics. So the bottleneck has shifted. 8 engineers used to mean one team, one roadmap, one set of stakeholders. Now it means 4 parallel work streams, 4 sets of priorities, 4 contexts to stay on top of. The EM role has fundamentally changed because of this. His suggested reframe, maybe the model needs a staff engineer in it, or more PMs, or both. He doesn't have a final answer, just an observation that we're starting to optimize around a different constraint than we were 10 years ago. From Code Opinion, a piece on how decoupling in software architecture moves complexity rather than removing it. This is a clean, well-argued piece on a topic that gets muddled a lot. The key frame, every step you take away from an in-memory method call, adds a new kind of complexity and a new cost. You might gain independent deployability, scalability, different availability characteristics. But you are introducing something you now have to understand, operate, and debug. Direct calls give you traceability and a clear call stack, but they create tight coupling and shared availability. Abstractions create useful seams, but add indirection. Queues introduce temporal decoupling, but require you to handle retries, duplicate delivery, idempotency, dead letter queues, and the outbox pattern. Publish, subscribe gives you independent consumers and extensibility, but creates invisible behavior. The full system behavior becomes hard to see when it's spread across multiple processes and topics. The point isn't that any of these patterns is wrong. It's that the complexity doesn't disappear. It moves. Choose based on your actual business case, not because some diagram in a conference talk showed a microservices architecture at the top. From DX's Brian, a piece on what code reviews are even for, prompted by some striking metadata. At Meta, significant lines of code per human landed diff increased 106% over the past year and more than 80% of. That growth came from agentic AI. Median pull request size grew 64%. Meanwhile, the percentage of diffs reviewed within 24 hours is declining. The math doesn't work. But before we ask AI to solve this by automating review, Brian asks a better question. What problem was code review solving in the first place? The research shows that defect-related comments make up only 14% of actual review comments. Code review was also about knowledge transfer, building collective ownership, teaching junior engineers how experienced ones think. The Microsoft Radar system is a good model here. It automates low to medium risk diffs while routing higher risk ones to humans. Three recommendations. Fix the basics. First, small PRs, good descriptions, automated checks, design AI around human judgment rather than replacing it, and protect what review is actually building. Shared. Understanding, not just defect detection. As Brian puts it, AI should reduce the time we spend reviewing code. It just shouldn't reduce the amount we learn from it. From API Evangelist, a piece on agents not magically understanding your API. This one cuts through some hype. The fantasy is that you point an agent at your systems and it figures out the rest, discovers endpoints, infers business logic, reconciles inconsistent naming. The reality is that an agent is walking into the same building as a new engineer, through the same door, with the same missing map. It just does it faster and complains less. AI does not eliminate the need for good API design. It makes the absence of it catastrophically more expensive. A human hits your confusingly named endpoint, feels the friction, and works around it. An agent hits it at machine speed, makes a confident wrong assumption, and propagates that across 1,000 automated calls before anyone notices. The sloppy, underdocumented, inconsistent API that a human could muddle through becomes a liability when automation points at it. The work hasn't disappeared. It's shifted from writing documentation for humans to writing machine-readable descriptions that agents can actually use. A short piece from InfoWorld on why observability doesn't explain what happened. The argument is that observability tools tell you what's happening in your system right now. But why is this happening, and what triggered it, tend to sit outside their reach. The real problem is a correlation problem, not a data problem. The data exists, it's just never been assembled automatically. The emerging category here is operational intelligence tooling that sits across observability, ticketing, and deployment systems, and does the cross-referencing before a human ever opens a second tab. The idea is that the engineer in the war room arrives with a structured view of what happened, the deployment, the cases, the timeline, and their job becomes confirming, refining, and deciding, rather than assembling the picture from scratch. From James O'Reilly on LinkedIn, Part 4 of a series on anti-gravity agent skills, Subagent Messaging with SendMessage. This one's practical for anyone building multi-agent workflows. The problem it solves, when you dispatch multiple background subagents, the parent orchestrator goes silent until all of them finish. No visibility into progress, no way to intervene if something goes wrong. SendMessage lets subagents report back to the parent during execution. Structured JSON payloads at milestone boundaries, not free-form text dumps. The parent wakes up reactively when events arrive rather than polling in a loop. O'Reilly also covers anti-patterns. Avoid ping-pong message loops without termination conditions. Always pass the parent's conversation ID explicitly in the initial prompt. Send structured payloads, not prose. And don't spam messages for every file read. Limit to major milestones. The bonus is a circuit breaker pattern. If a subagent hits an unrecoverable error, it signals the parent, who broadcasts an abort to the other workers. Elegant. From the New Stack, Michael Cote, on the real cost of building your own internal developer platform. The core number, about 60 people and 7.5 million a year every year if you do it, the way most enterprises end up doing it. 7 product teams aligned with the CNCF platform reference architecture, each a 7 to 9 person team. That's 37.5 million over 5 years on payroll alone for the team that builds the platform, not the apps. The hidden cost is the shadow platform engineering that happens in each development group, someone doing the glue work between the platform and the application teams, unaccounted for in the business case. He flags resume-driven development as a factor. Engineers get promoted for shipping platforms, so they keep building them. His advice? Calculate the all-in headcount before the meeting. Be honest about year 3 when you need to add features that the commercial vendor shipped last quarter, and build the developer-facing layer but. Buy the rest. Platform is plumbing. Your apps are what differentiate you. A pair of pieces at the end that go well together. First from O'Reilly, Tim O'Reilly on why open source matters for AI. The framing leans on the Apache story from the mid-90s. Netscape and Microsoft raced to build every feature into their products, while Apache stayed a clean web server with a standard extension layer and won. Modularity, not features, was the moat. Tim maps this to the current AI landscape. As models commoditize, competition moves up the stack to context. The MCP protocol from Anthropic is an example. An open standard for letting any application reach any tool or data source without a custom integration for each pairing. Open weights let developers customize and extend models, build businesses on top of them without asking permission. The key point, open source AI is about architecture and composability, not just licenses. Drew Breinig's observation is sharp here. Each new version of frontier models moves more behavior out of an editable layer and into the weights, where nobody outside the lab can see or change it. The model stops being a component you build with and starts being an appliance you rent. That's worth resisting. And then Gary Marcus immediately lands the counterpoint on the same day. Open source is not the same as open weight. This matters. Because the New York Times, among others, called Meta's Muse Glimmer open source when it isn't. Marcus's distinction is clear, true. Open source means you release the complete source code. You can look at it, change anything, fork it, rebuild from scratch. Open weight releases the trained model weights, which is the output of a complex pipeline, but not the pipeline itself. You can't see the training data, can't see how it was pre-processed, can't see the exact algorithms and parameters. You can post-train it, but you can't rebuild it or investigate it the way you could with something like Allen AI's Olmo, which actually releases weights, training data, and recipes. His analogy, it's like releasing a cake, but not the recipe. You can add icing, maybe some fruit, but you can't change the raw ingredients. The implication is significant. Developers can't test hypotheses about training data. Regulators can't investigate bias. Scientists can't examine how much of model behavior is regurgitation versus genuine. Reasoning. Marcus's frustration with the conflation is legitimate, and his point that Zuckerberg knows the difference and still benefits from the conflation is pointed. So, that's today's list. A packed episode. Everything from how to think about code review in the age of AI coding agents, to why product management just became the new bottleneck, to the real cost of building your own platform, to a genuinely useful deep dive on agent-subagent messaging, and the mini-theme at the end on the open-source AI debate. Some of these pieces connect. Marcus's piece and O'Reilly's piece are in direct conversation, and the code review piece from DX pairs nicely with the platform engineering piece in terms of thinking carefully about what practices we inherit from a previous era and whether they still make sense. Worth sitting with.